You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. And welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Missouri AFL-CIO's Missouri Works Initiative and United Auto Workers Local 249. The Missouri Works Initiative is formed to eliminate barriers to economic opportunities by connecting Missourians to the necessary resources to build life-sustaining careers. Missouri Works Initiative is the nonprofit side of the Missouri AFL-CIO. And United Auto Workers Local 249, members building the best Ford trucks and vans in the world. The Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, we don't trust teachers to teach. We're banning books. We're doing educational gag orders. But now, because of the politics, we trust them to carry a loaded firearm? That's Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, and she will be on the show tonight along with Jason Roberts, president of the Kansas City Federation of Teachers Local 691, to talk about teaching, public education, and gun violence in the schools. In the news, May Day in France, there's nothing like it here, and the writer's strike, Colbert speaks out. Our feature at the end of the show is Safety First with Mary Ario. She'll be talking about Mine's safety leader announces stand down to reverse a deadly trend, and new bill aimed at improving working conditions for nurses. And finally, looking for some serious reading? Try flying blind. Now for the news.
The news from our side, May 4th, 2023. Mike Elk's payday report covered May Day in France, where protests over President Emmanuel Macron's rising of the retirement age from 62 to 64 still provokes outrage among French workers and unions who are vowing to continue striking. Strikes have already seen millions of workers in the streets against the changes that are likely to grow. General Confederation of Workers, or the GCGT, leader Sophie Binet says all labor unions are calling on the President of the Republic to show some wisdom, listen and understand what's happening in the country, and not to promulgate this law. Public opinion shows that law remains unpopular, and that lawmakers who support the reforms are likely to be voted out of office. With public support behind them, labor leaders vow to hold more strikes. Binet continued, "We have to continue mobilizing until the end, until the government understands there's no way out other than to withdraw this reform. We can't move on to anything else until this reform is repealed." Labor experts say that given past battles, French labor leaders feel confident they can overturn the retirement law changes. France has a very different labor system than the United States, which rallies on sectoral bargaining. And sectoral bargain union contracts that set bare minimums for the entire system. Also in France, unlike the United States, multiple unions can exist within one workplace, and workers can change their unions. Unlike in the United States, where AFL-CIO rules for members' unions strikingly forbid competition between unions for members within workplaces, French unions are forced to compete within workplaces to get individual members to sign up. With more workers protected by union craft, collective bargaining agreements, and unions being forced to be more responsive or lose their members to union, the French labor movement is known for being militant, aggressive in its actions. There's something like 95% or more of workforce is covered by labor agreements. And as it turns out, on May Day, between 782,000 and 2.3 million people demonstrated across France, depending on who was doing the estimating. The anger of the demonstrators was intense. According to Al Jazeera, nearly 300 were arrested, as more than 100 police officers were wounded, and there was a lot of property damage.
With signs reading "Fists up, pins down," over 11,000 Hollywood writers are on strike since Monday. Their issues, like with so many other workers this year, are pay and benefits, but also the way Writers Guild members make their money is a little different. It's called residuals, meaning that a significant part of their income should come from the repeats, the reruns, the streaming services of the shows they write, not just for something they may appear once and be gone. Union members claim that the rise of streaming services like Netflix and Hulu has fundamentally changed their level of compensation, impoverishing them, and they need the very powerful companies that control TV and film to fork over more to them. Lots of primetime personalities have been weighing in on the side of the working class writers against the corporate fat cats. Stephen Colbert appeared with his face inserted on a picture, along with the faces of several dozen staff writers on his show. Here's what he had to say. Thanks to More Perfect Union for this clip.
These are our writers. These are our writers, and I'll stick myself in there because I'm WGA too, and they're so important to our show. They write the monologue, the meanwhile, the cold open, and without these people, this show would be called The Late Show with a guy rambling about the Lord of the Rings and boats for an hour. This negotiation impacts our whole staff, of course, who work so hard to bring you this show every night, which is why everybody, including myself, hopes both sides reach a deal. But I also think that the writers' demands are not unreasonable. I'm a member of the Guild. I support collective bargaining. This nation owes so much to unions. They're the reason. Unions. This is true. Unions are the reason we have weekends, and by extension, why we have TGI Fridays. So the next time you enjoy a whiskey-glazed Blaze burger, you thank a union.
The Kansas Reflector reports that an investigation into Emporia State University's realignment plan, which included the firing of tenured professors, faults the university for, quote, shifting and incoherent rationales, and concludes university administrators and the Kansas Board of Regents members are unfit to lead. The American Association of University Professors released its findings Monday following months of interviews and reviews of documentation. Investigators said the actions taken by the Emporia State University president, Ken Hush, with the blessing of the Kansas Board of Regents, amounts to an attack on academic freedom. The AAUP senior program officer, Michael DeCesare, said, "This does not reflect well on the university. If I were a prospective faculty member, I would have serious reservations about even considering a position at Emporia State. Emporia State fired 30 tenured and tenure-track professors in September of 2022 under a temporary COVID-19 emergency policy. The university cited, quote, extreme financial pressure, unquote, when presenting its, quote, framework, unquote, for campus realignment to the Regents, even though the university wasn't facing financial exigency. The university subsequently reinvested in new programs, handed out secret performance bonuses, offered to rehire fired professors as adjuncts, and is looking to hire new professors with the same qualifications as ones who were fired. Last week, an appeals officer for the State Office of Administrative Hearings reinstated Michael Behrens, an associate professor of English. He's the third fired faculty member to get his job back through the appeals process, with 10 more awaiting decisions. All three were reinstated for the same reason. The university refused to say why they had been fired. That's the news from our side. The news tonight was read by Michael Savoir and Stephen Hill, and I'm Judy Ansel.
In this country's distant corners, when someone needs to learn, you'll find the teacher changing lives as pages turn. Stand together, united we are one. Together we belong, proud to be union, standing strong. No matter where you come from, no matter how rich or poor, all our dreams are equal, the future could be yours. Stand together, united we are one. Stand together.
I'm Judy Morgan, President Emeritus of the American Federation of Teachers, Local 691, and former Missouri State Rep for District 24. Tonight on the Heartland Labor Forum, we'll be covering a wide range of topics relating to public education. We are delighted to have as our guest Randy Weingarten, President of the American Federation of Teachers, a 1.7 million member union, and Jason Roberts, President of our local Kansas City Federation of Teachers and School-Related Personnel, Local 691, who represents the teachers and school employees in the Kansas City Public Schools. Welcome, Randy and Jason.
Oh, it's so cool to be here, and it's so cool to be with the Judys.
Well, thank you, and we're so glad that Jason's been on our show a number of times, but when he said you were coming into town, we were just thrilled that you would come by our show and do a show with us on public education. I know something that's just so important to all of us in this studio. So the first question, Randy, I'm going to ask you, I know you're here to visit Kansas City. One of the reasons is to see our Manual Career Technical Center.
Right.
And just a bit of history, Manual actually opened in 1897 as a vocational school.
Oh, wow.
And when Brown versus Topeka Board of Education was decided to end segregation, Emanuel was one of the first public high schools in Kansas City to desegregate.
Wow.
So I sense from reading some of your articles that you really care a lot about career technical education. So talk to our listeners about why that's important to you and why it's important for our students.
Fantastic. So first, I'm really glad to be here. And, you know, let me just say, I love Jason Roberts and just what has happened in terms of the local and the kind of alignment. And Judy, you started this, but one of the adages that we have in the labor movement and in our union is that together we can accomplish what's impossible alone. And I think Jason is the epitome of that, and just the array of bringing people together. Our members, the community, the schools, to actually do what kids need, to actually address what kids need and what communities need, and to do it at a moment of time, in a state that's not so friendly mm-hmm. to the work we need to do to lift people up. I know that's a bit of an understatement, but it's so as others are banning books, we're trying to help kids learn. And that's why I'm really glad and honored to have been invited to be in Kansas City to be with Jason and our members today. But I also want to say that, you know, this is a city and this is a community that's been racked in the last few days with, the unspeakable. And when we need to find ways to ensure that, you know, if a kid makes a mistake and goes to a wrong house, that it's not met with shots. If a kid, like in my home state in New York, mistakenly goes into a wrong driveway, it's not met with shots. If a cheerleader in Texas, mistakenly goes into a wrong car, it's not met with shots. And so we really need to deal with gun violence and to take that seriously. So I want to say to the Carl family, we are all with you in terms of thoughts and prayers, not just thoughts and prayers, but in terms of the fight to make sure that our streets are safe and our schools are welcoming. So having said that, look, this is who we are as teachers. And kind of like spoiler alert, I taught at Clara Barton High School for the Health Professions in Brooklyn, New York. It was a CTE school. And I taught in a period of time when, you know, there was a real push to get rid of vocational education. And we fought to keep Clara Barton and the LPN, the practical nurse program, the dental hygienist program. We fought to keep some of these programs because we understood, and I say this as a teacher of AP Gov, we understood that hands-on learning and finding ways to make sure that kids wanted to be in school and they saw a purpose of school, not just the homework, not just the testing, but a real purpose. What would kind of spur their passion? What would kind of catalyze their interest? And what we've always seen is that career tech ed done well does that. It's hands-on learning. It's experiential learning. And frankly, 60% of the kids in America don't go to college. So if we actually could do what we say school is about, which is preparing kids for life, for college, for career, for civics, for citizenship, we need to make sure that that career part is real. And so I'm so delighted to go to Manual today because that's, you know, the new age career tech ed, the new generation career tech ed is really cool, whether it's cybersecurity or whether it's welding or whether it's automotive work or culinary work or, you know, all the IT work. It's really cool stuff. And, you know, as a debate teacher, I wanted kids to engage in hands-on learning. Robotics teachers would tell you the same thing. So we need to try to take these gems and scale it so that everyone has an opportunity. I'll say one more thing, which is this. We have an economy that's really changing. And I give the president a lot of credit because he is very focused on changing the economy so that it ensures that we can build it from ground up and middle out. Mm-hmm. And so that everyone has a chance. Every worker has a chance. He's the most pro-worker president we've probably ever had. So think about the opportunity then to actually align workforce development from middle school and high school, using our career tech ed schools to do that and creating scale so that we have real energy and real opportunity from high school, engaging employers, having earn and learn programs. And so we're aligning interest of kids, workforce development, the jobs of today and tomorrow. That is what Career Tech Ed can do.
So, Jason, are you excited about Randy being here and going to Manual? She made me feel very excited just by her words she just said.
Of course. I am blessed that I get to serve with Randy as my president. I get to be the president to the members here, but Randy is my president. And I'm always encouraged and inspired by the things that I hear her say. I was particularly excited when I heard about AFT's focus on CTE. I have said that Manual is probably our most underutilized secret in KCPS. It's a school that does not have near what it could as far as capacity. And so we really have an opportunity to show the union's involvement in this process, our support of Manual. And also to show the community as a whole that this is a place that KCPS offers that we realized through Blueprint 2030, our community didn't even realize we still had it.
Wow.
So it is a real opportunity, particularly with partnerships that we have with the city for wastewater management and with automotive reconstruction and the culinary department and Project Lead the Way Engineering. We have lots of partnerships, but the community doesn't even know that.
Right, I agree. Is it still a half-day program or full day?
It is. It's a half-day program with split sessions.
Okay.
So there's a morning session, and then those students go to their homeschool for their core classes, and then people that were in core classes in the morning come in the afternoon.
Okay. I'm Judy Morgan. Tonight we're talking to Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, and Jason Roberts, president of the Kansas City Federation of Teachers and School. Well, Randy, you brought up gun violence, and that is a topic I want to talk about. And you mentioned the horrific incident that happened in Kansas City that's made national news, plus the other two that are just unbelievable, what's happened to these kids.
And gun violence is a leading cause of death for children.
Yes, and that I was, I think I heard that maybe like 6 months ago. It hasn't been that long ago that I heard that statistic, and I was truly appalled when I heard that. And I think, the mass shootings actually make the big news, but there's also the homicides and the suicides that often get overlooked that are also caused by gun violence. So give us your thoughts on gun violence in general, and what can we do to stop this madness?
So, it's this is one of these areas where I put my teacher hat back on, because I know it's not what's said, it's what's heard, and we have to meet people where they are. And so, there may be a different appetite for the kind of common sense gun laws that I think we need to have in Missouri than there may be in New York or in Israel or in Australia or in New Zealand. But let me just say that we know, we have research, we have data, we know what works to stop the epidemic of gun violence. And this is really a matter of, is there a will in this country to do that? And we can stop the epidemic of gun violence and still honor the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. We can do that. So, for example, it was not a violation of the Second Amendment when this country banned assault weapons, weapons of war. They're not hunting weapons, they're not muskets, but weapons of war, which when they are used against people, they completely tear the insides of children out. People may want to just see what happened in Uvalde when you had a weapon of war tear the insides out of those children. Why don't we ban them again? If we did that, it would solve so much. Why not have red flag laws? Mm-hmm. Those actually give teachers and district attorneys and police officers a tool to temporarily remove a gun if one has probable cause to do it. A teacher will know, take what happened in Virginia when they were told that that kid, the six-year-old, had a gun. If you had a red flag law, you could actually immediately say, we have to do something about that, not pretend it doesn't exist. And then there's issues about safe storage and background checks and stopping guns from having these kind of multiple capacity to shoot 50 or 60 bullets. But these are all things that in states that have done it in the United States, there are fewer gun, there are fewer deaths and injuries because of guns. And this last week, just to have these three or four incidents of children who made a mistake going into somebody's driveway inadvertently, going into somebody's car inadvertently, knocking on a door trying to find their brother, and being met with gunshots, being met with that. You know, it used to be, okay, somebody would say something to you. Get away from the door.
Yeah.
You're in the wrong driveway. But now with the ready availability of guns, something that would have just been a, oops, there's a mistake. Now we have injury and death. We as a country have to do better. Our kids' life means more and should mean more than guns.
So Jason, let's get down to the personal with the people you represent. Are they afraid to be in school with the, I don't think Missouri has had the kind of mass shootings that some of the other schools have had in other states, but are your teachers afraid to go to school? Are the kids afraid?
Well, you know, we did have a mass shooting in St. Louis, St. Louis Public, which is an AFT local.
And a member died.
Yes, and a member died. So it has happened in Missouri.
Oh, okay.
I am particularly concerned, though, about the legislature voting to expand guns in school. The legislature a few years ago voted to arm teachers.
I voted against it, by the way, when I was there.
Which was a horrible decision that we didn't support. But they have since voted out of the House and sent to the Senate a bill to expand who can carry guns in schools. And unfortunately, some Kansas City Democrats voted for it. And when I got that word, I picked up the phone and called every one of them who had their own BS excuses. But I think the issue here is we have to protect ourselves and our students. But the way to do that is not with guns. I contend that putting guns in schools makes you less safe because in order for there to be a gun not on you, it has to be in something, which while you're doing hall duty, a student can get. It doesn't make sense to say it'll be locked up. Your response time is delayed. If it's on you, you then become a target of students coming behind you and knocking you out to get your gun. Now students have access to a loaded weapon. It is asinine, the arguments that are being made to arm teachers, but nobody thinks it through.
Right. I mean, Jason is just totally right. And just think about, we don't trust teachers enough to teach.
We want to give them a gun.
We're banning books. We're doing education gag orders. But now, because of the politics, we trust them enough to carry a loaded firearm? I mean, it's just nuts. And what we've seen from the data is, as Jason just said, it just makes things less safe. If you think about it, it makes things less safe. And just, you know, sorry, we shouldn't be a fact-free environment. In Nashville, there were people that had guns. And it's not going to, we have to deal with guns. A good guy with a gun is not going to deal with or stop every bad guy with a gun. And having said that, I want to also say thank you to our law enforcement in Nashville were amazing. In Kentucky were amazing. Mm-hmm. But we have to deal with the ready availability of guns in the wrong hands and particularly weapons of war.
I always said that if you told me I had to carry a gun to teach, that would be the day I quit teaching. You know, as a teacher, I never wanted to carry a gun. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in just a little bit.
The National Federation of the Blind of Missouri, Kansas City Chapter, along with the Ivanhoe Chapter, invite you to their annual Walk for Independence. The walk will take place on Saturday, May 6th at Luce Park at 5200 Warnell Road at the Luce Park Pavilion. Registration will begin at 9 a.m., with the walk beginning at 10 a.m. This is a rain or shine event. For more information, you can call 816-923-7074. That number again, 816-923-7074. This message is a public service of KKFI.
KKFI is now posting new content every day to our Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So be sure to like and follow your community radio station on social media at KKFI 901 FM. And thanks for supporting this station since 1988.
Welcome back to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Judy Morgan. Our guests tonight are Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, and Jason Roberts, president of the Kansas City Federation of Teachers and school-related personnel, Local 691. More than three-quarters of the states are experiencing a teacher shortage, and Missouri is one of those states. Randy, what's AFT done on this issue?
Well, you know, this issue is kind of our middle name, because we know that if you don't have the teachers to teach, we're not going to have a public education system that is worthy of a great nation. And so what we've done in the past 2 years in particular is we've really relied on the collective wisdom, not just the research, but the collective wisdom of our members. We pulled together a task force of members from around the country and really spent 6 or 7 months thinking about not just what the problems were, not just to study the problems, but how to solve the teacher shortage. And it comes down to, and let me just say, it's not just the teacher shortage, it's a bus driver shortage, it's a guidance counselor shortage, it's a school nurse shortage, because everyone in this ecosystem that we call school is really important. And what it comes down to is we have to make this profession one that people want to go into and stay. People want to make a difference in the lives of others. There is a huge appetite in America for people wanting to do that, and that's what teachers and school staff do. So it's not a matter of people not having the will to go into teaching and stay in teaching. What we have a shortage of is we have a shortage of pay. We have a shortage of, or appropriate pay. We have a shortage of decent conditions. We have a shortage of agency for teachers. And so we have to deal with all of those things. And in fact, what we're seeing now is that the satisfaction of teachers have really always figured out, in some ways teachers are their own worst enemies, because teachers have always figured out how to get things done regardless of the conditions, regardless of the obstacles. I keep saying that teachers MacGyver better than MacGyver. And we saw this in terms of the, you know, the pandemic, when you had so many schools that had so few facility to deal with remote education, and teachers just figured it out. But what we need to do is have better working conditions. We need to have good ventilation in schools. We need to have smaller class sizes. We need to have the wraparound services around schools, so when a kid is having a hard time, when there's sadness, disconnection, you have guidance counselors, you have social workers. We need to make sure that we have universal meals so the kids are fed and families are fed. We need to make sure that kids have glasses, they have dental work, so that their teeth don't hurt. They can see a blackboard. So what I'm saying is that on the conditional side, we need to have situations where we can meet the needs of kids. On the salary side, teaching should essentially be a job that gives you entree to get into and stay into the middle class. So salaries have to have a livable wage. We need to make sure that when teachers have student debt, we can deal with that. And the last thing I would say, the last big thing I would say, is whether it's about data-driven instruction or about these book bans, we should trust our teachers to actually teach instead of micromanaging everything they do from the outside. And frankly, this is not new. Look at the Remember the Scopes trial. But it's meaner now. The parents want teachers to be able to meet the needs of kids. We should trust our teachers to be able to do it. So what the AFT did is we unpacked all of this. And this past summer at our convention, we presented this task force report with lots of solutions in these areas, and it was passed universally. And one of the things I love about what Jason did, and I lifted this up in the speech of that I just gave in Washington a couple of weeks ago, Jason took that report and used it as a blueprint for this incredible contract that was just negotiated in Kansas City. Teachers want to teach. They want to help lift children up. Parents want teachers to teach. We need to reverse the teacher satisfaction now. And the number that haunts me most is that parents love their kids' teachers, but they do not want their kids to become teachers. We need to reverse that.
That's sad. Well, I can really relate to one thing you said about teachers being able to be flexible and always meet the situation, whatever it is. In our district, when I was a teacher and union president, we went through a revolving door of superintendents, programs always changing, and the teachers were the one constant and school staffs in those buildings that kept things together. Jason, as Randy said, you were on that AFT task force. And I just kind of just hit me. It's not called teacher task force. It is called school staff shortage task force. So like Randy said, it's not about just about teacher shortages, but about shortages and all those other school employees. And she did. I read your speech. I think it was in defense of public education at the National Press Club just a few weeks ago. And you did recognize Jason and our local for the work they did. Taking that blueprint of that task force. Jason, talk about that, the task force. And I know this is something that you do love to talk about, and I don't blame you. It's a good thing to talk about.
Well, being on the task force itself was an honor to be invited because I hadn't been president terribly long, but I had kind of been shoved into office with PSRP, a classified contract that had expired a year ago. And my predecessor just didn't want to negotiate that contract. So there were some issues there. And I immediately negotiated a contract that I felt reflected the values of lifting up our classified staff. So when I came in, people made $11 an hour, and no one makes less than $15 an hour. Snow days are paid.
Kind of explain that, what it was like before.
So if we had a snow day, our classified staff were not paid for that day because the district said, you'll make it up, and so you'll get that money later on. Well, sometimes snow days are forgiven, which means the employee never did make the money. So what we do now is you have to be paid for the snow days.
That's really a big game.
Right.
And then
and it's treating people respectfully.
It's giving dignity.
Right.
And I've been very vocal that giving our members dignity in the workplace is important. So based on that, I was invited to be on the committee that issued the document, and then I took the document and used it in bargaining, where AFT negotiated the highest starting salary in the state of Missouri. We got our plan time back, which is huge for teachers. Teachers are thrilled. This just cracks me up that we got rid of the business casual dress code, and now they can wear jeans and T-shirts every day.
Which I regret that came in during my tenure.
And I undid it in honor of you.
And I'm glad you did. I fought it, but we ended up getting something for it. So, you know, negotiations are compromised, but I am very glad you got rid of it.
But I think the biggest thing for me is that this local became the first in the state of Missouri to bargain paid parental leave.
Yes.
It is for men and women for birth and adoption. And that shows sort of what my vision is for this local, right? That we're giving dignity and respect to everyone, and that we're doing it at the bargaining table because there isn't any other place to do it.
Exactly.
You
right.
cannot expect an employer to actually do these things on their own.
I agree.
And what Jason did and what the Kansas City Local did, we want teachers to be part of community. We want teachers to have families in the community in which they teach. And when you start negotiating things like parental leave, it creates you. It signifies that you're not itinerant, that you have a stake in this, and it's important for the school system to recognize that, and it's important to our members. We need, all of us need to really focus on what are the family friendly policies we need in America. We can't just talk the talk of family. We actually have to walk the walk. And that means when people have kids, we need to give time off for those kids. Mm-hmm. And we need to have it for both the moms and the dads. Mm-hmm. So good for you, Jason.
Can I add one more thing that I was particularly proud of in this sure. contract that has flown under the radar? I removed the language of displacement. Meaning that AFT will always be the local in this district. No one can ever come in and challenge us.
Fantastic.
So for the rest of the time KCPS is here, AFT will always be the only recognized teacher organization.
You're listening to the Heartland Labor Forum. Our guests this evening are Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, and Jason Roberts, president of the Kansas City Federation of Teachers and School-Related Personnel, Local 691. And I'm Judy Morgan. Let's talk about culture wars. In the Missouri House, funding for public libraries was completely zeroed out. No dollars for the public libraries. Now, I do have to tell you, the Missouri Senate did just put that money back in. So we don't know what will happen, though, because there will have to be a conference committee between the House and the Senate. But the chair of the Budget Committee said that he was taking the money out of the public library funds because he was mad at the Library Association because they had brought a lawsuit dealing with the book bans that had already happened. First for you, how are the culture wars impacting public education nationwide?
They're terrible. They're just terrible. Because what they're attempting to do is they are doing two things. They are making public schools battlegrounds at the same exact time in a post-COVID environment where we need to make schools safe and welcoming places for kids. So at the moment that we have to actually meet kids' needs after this terrible disruption that COVID created, what the culture wars are doing is creating more division. So in and of itself, that's terrible. And the second thing that's terrible about this is schools are about inquiry. Schools are about curiosity. Schools are not places that tell kids what to think, but schools are places that create an environment to help kids learn how to think and to be curious about things. I'm sorry, to be curious about things, to apply knowledge, to critically think, to develop relationships. There's going to be false starts and stops in that. There's going to be things that kids say that may be wrong. There's going to be conflict sometimes. When you end up trying to gag that or stop that or say, no, this is prohibited. I mean, think about what's happening in terms of elementary schools in some places. Why would you ban a book about Roberto Clemente? Why would you ban a book about Anne Frank? Why would you ban a book about Ruby Bridges? Why not let kids understand what these people went through? It's terrible for both of these respects. It thwarts learning and it creates division. And the last thing I'll say is, what are they afraid of? What are they afraid of? And why, if some parent doesn't want their kid to read a book, okay, that may be the parent's right. Why would you stop other kids? Because other parents have rights too. So all these levels, book banning is really terrible for kids and communities.
Jason, same question to you about the culture wars, but how do you see them impacting our state and your particular district in Kansas City?
I'm particularly worried about the piece of legislation that was passed out of the Missouri Senate and is now in the House, where we anticipate it's going to be passed, on parental rights. And I think it's SB4, if I remember right. What I'm particularly concerned about is not the parents' Bill of Rights, but the information portal. because this public information portal is going to require every single teacher in every single school to provide every single PowerPoint, every single lecture, every single document, every single worksheet, every single lesson plan that they ever give. Every school will have to provide every agenda for a professional development, every handout that goes in professional development, publicize every speaker in professional development. It is going to be overload such that even the Commissioner of Education, in my meeting with her 2 months ago, said DESE is not equipped to handle this. I'm concerned that it's going to be an additional overburden on educators because we'll be fired if we don't comply with law. But it's not feasible. We don't have the means or the time to do this. But if you have to create additional positions at the board building, then that's less money going into the classroom. It's less teachers. It's less paras. It's less nurses. So this has a terribly negative effect on public education, all under the guise of parental rights. But parents already have access to all of that. All they have to do is request it. So I'm terribly concerned about this bill and what it's going to mean for our members.
And Jason, you said it's passed which chamber?
It's passed the Senate.
Okay, so
is the one we rely on. And it's sitting in the House where we think it will be passed.
Okay. And I'm sure the governor will likely sign it.
Will likely sign it, yes.
Okay. I want to go to something kind of a more general question right now. Randy, in a recent New York Times article, you said attacks on public education are not new. The difference today is that the attacks are intended not just to undermine education, but to destroy it. So how do you think these attacks over the years have evolved from undermining to destroying education?
What's happening now is that these dark money interests, and I call them the Billionaires Club, they have very little interest in the pluralism and the comedy of what our great nation should be. And so they don't shy away from telling you what they want. And what they want is a universal voucher system. And they have said, one of their operatives, Chris Rufo, has said, to get to a universal voucher system, you need to create universal public school distrust. So they have you see what Ron DeSantis has done in California and in Florida. $4 billion taken out of public schools this year for a universal voucher system.
And for our listeners maybe who are not familiar with vouchers, that's basically where public tax dollars are given to parents to use for private and religious schools.
Right. So their view, the reason I made that clarion call is that 90% of kids still attend public schools, and most parents, regardless of whether they are Republican, Democratic, Independent, they want their kids to have a safe and welcoming environment in great public schools. That's what they want. But what these operatives are doing, basically the Billionaires Club, is starve the public school systems with these voucher movements or other kinds of movements, then exploit the criticisms, then create more and more and more division and undermine the one entity in America that is designed to ensure that we still have a democracy, to ensure that there is a place where kids can have fun and joy and build relationships and get the skills and knowledge they need to dream their dreams and seize on them. And that's what we are fighting against. But it is now venal, and it is divisive, and it is mean, and it is the kind of things we see, of the compounding effect of the effects of COVID and the needs that kids have not being addressed, and instead this culture war division and defunding that happens, I am very concerned that the place called school is not going to be there in a way that we need to meet the needs of kids. You just heard what Jason said. How would a teacher really, instead of actually talking to parents and having a teacher-parent night, really, you spend all this time putting documents in a portal that will never be read? Mm-hmm. Instead of spending those moments thinking about how you teach kids, that is venal. That is intended to crush the spirits of kids and teachers.
And I am so sorry, but we're out of time. And I am so grateful, Jason, that you asked Randy to come speak with us. We have Randy Weingarten, who is president of the American Federation of Teachers, with us today, and Jason Roberts, president of the Kansas City Federation of Teachers and school-related personnel, Local 691. I appreciate both of you so much, not only for being here, but for all the work you do on behalf of our teachers, school staffs, and our students. Thank you, and I'm Judy Morgan.
Now working in this mill is dirty and dangerous, and I'm taking risks anyway. But when I have the time and the proper equipment, I can do my job safely each day. Everybody tells me that they're sticklers for safety. I'm not here to say that they lie. I'm saying we just come to work here. We don't come to die.
Hello, this is Mary Ario for Safety First. First, Mind Safety Leader announces Stand Down to reverse deadly trend. From www.safetyandhealthmagazine.com for April 18th. Prompted by an alarming trend of recent minor deaths, Mind Safety and Health Administration head Chris Williamson is calling on the industry to strengthen safety efforts. In an April 14th letter to mining stakeholders, Williamson writes that MSHA has recorded 16 minor deaths so far this year, more than half of the 29 observed by the agency all of last year. In an effort to raise awareness and prevent additional deaths in the industry, MSHA will observe an inaugural Stand Down to Save Lives on May 17th. The agency will provide an online toolkit and resources, the letter states. The fatal mining incidents this year have involved vehicle collisions, electrocutions, falls from elevated surfaces, equipment rollovers, and drowning. Williamson adds that MSHA must work together with miners, operators, and labor unions to reverse the trend. Next, new bill aimed at improving work conditions for nurses. From www.safetyandhealthmagazine.com for April 3rd. According to bill sponsors Representative Jan Schakowsky, Democrat of Illinois, and Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat of Ohio, the Nurse Staffing Standards for Hospital Patient Safety and Quality Care Act would protect nurses, drive better patient care, and lower health care costs. Specifically, it would set minimum nurse-to-patient staffing requirements, require studies of best practices for nurse staffing, and provide whistleblower protections to nurses who advocate the safety of their patients. For years, I've talked to exhausted nurses who have said they go home at night wondering if they forgot to turn a patient because they were stretched too thin, Schakowsky said in a March 30th press release. Schakowsky and Brown previously introduced the legislation in May 2021, drawing support from National Nurses United, the American Federation of Teachers, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, SEIU, and the AFL-CIO. Many nurses have left the bedside because they are unwilling to risk their patients' lives by being forced to care for them in an unsafe manner, NNU President Deborah Berger said in the release. This bill will bring them back to providing direct care at the bedside and in clinics by ensuring their patients receive proper, safe, optimal, and timely care. To send a message of support for this bill to your lawmakers, go to www.nationalnursesunited.org. Finally, need some serious reading? Try Flying Blind. The Confined Space Newsletter has a recent book review of Flying Blind, Corporate Greed, Captured Regulators, and 346 Deaths. At jordanbarab.com/confinedspace for April 7th. Flying Blind by Bloomberg investigative journalist Pierre Robeson is the story of Boeing and corporate greed that led to the development of a faulty airliner, the 737 MAX. Flaws known to Boeing and hidden from the FAA led to the two crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia that killed 346 people. It's a tragic story from several angles. Boeing was known as a company where engineers ruled and safety mattered. That was all until Boeing merged with McDonnell Douglas and adopted the company's corporate culture. The only focus was on stockholder returns, stock buybacks instead of investments in safe engineering. It was also a story of the failure of government oversight. Regulatory reforms passed by Congress and zealously implemented by the George W. Bush administration transformed the Federal Aviation Administration from an agency that oversaw aircraft safety to an agency that essentially worked for Boeing. Finally, it's a story of racism. Although the fatal flaw of the 737 MAX was identified immediately after the October 2018 crash of the Indonesian Lion Air Boeing 737 MAX, the fleet was not grounded while Boeing took its time to make necessary corrections. No Americans were killed on the Lion Air flight, and Boeing pushed the story that foreign pilots didn't know how to fly. The review describes flying blind as a fast but devastating and infuriating read. This is Mary Ariel for Safety First.
And this is Judy Ansel with the Heartland Labor Forum calendar. The National Mobilization for Reproductive Justice wants labor to take a stronger stand against the attacks on women. They want unions, union leaders, and activists to sign a letter to AFL-CIO President Liz Schuler. For more information, go to info@reprojusticenow.org. The Labor Beacon is having a City Council candidate forum. That's Saturday, May 13th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at IBEW Local 124. Register at laborbeaconforum.eventbrite.com. Labor Notes May Steward Workshop, Just Cause with Robert Schwartz, Monday, May 22nd, 5 to 6:30 p.m. This is online. You can register at labornotes.org/events or email joe@labornotes.org. Registration is open for Camp NAWIC for high school girls to learn about careers in the building trades. Register by May 18th. The camp runs from June 12th to 16th. Call Christy Turner, 816-845-0419. And the Missouri Alliance for Retired Americans is having the Gerald L. Red Randall Memorial Luncheon Friday, May 19th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. This will be at the Argosy Casino. Tickets can be ordered by contacting dstjones@aol.com. Our calendar is on the Heartland Labor Forum Facebook page, which you can go to, you can like, and you can see the calendar and get all of these links and numbers that I've mentioned. There are several positions for organizers open. Starbucks Union Workers United is looking for a Kansas City organizer. To apply, email a resume to geasterby@cmrjb.org. And Missouri Jobs with Justice is hiring a Kansas City organizer. Go to mojwj.org for more information. That's it for tonight's show. Tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. We're going to have Robert Pollan on talking about just transitions to a green economy. And we're going to be talking about the new stadium idea. Who will pay? Who will benefit? The Heartland Labor Forum is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Check out the rich diversity of programming related to workers and unions at laborradionetwork.org. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Stephen Hill. And stay tuned for the Thursday night special. It's Jasmine Jones with Next Step Forward.
Been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back to us too. Send us your feedback, your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to Heartland Labor Forum, KKFI@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming ones, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on this show are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening at 6 or to our rebroadcast Friday mornings at 5 right here, 90.1 FM, KKFI. We still got our pride, 'cause we are the working class and that.
place to be.